Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
All right, back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp with you. Nick Schwert producing the show. We're 30 minutes away from the Chiefs Red Half Hour. A little bit of Royals news during the break. Royals announcing a couple roster moves. Danny Duffy placed on the 10-day IL, retroactive back to the 17th, a left flexor strain. I believe that's the same injury that he was placed on the IL for earlier this season. Also, Brady Singer placed on the 10-day IL, retroactive to the 18th. Right shoulder fatigue, that's also something that has come up a little bit earlier this season as well. The corresponding move, Ryan McBroom recalled from AAA Omaha. Tyler Zuber recalled from AAA Omaha. And Bobby Witt Jr. and Nick Prado are making their AAA debuts in about 2 minutes or so. First pitch up in Omaha. So we'll get to that with our next guest, J.J. Pecola, Royals Assistant General Manager and Vice President. Always good to have J.J. on the show. I guess I wanted to start, though, just briefly, J.J., if you don't mind, with the roster moves and the injury news there briefly, just in terms of right shoulder fatigue. I know we had talked to you before the season wondering how the organization would kind of just handle some of these pitchers with innings limits. Is this something that you guys maybe were worried about heading into the season with any pitcher based off of some fatigue and the amount of innings that someone like Brady Singer had pitched the year prior?
Yeah, there certainly was more concern coming into this year with a 60-game season, and obviously in the minor leagues, the guys really didn't play. So there was concerns, and you know, we decided collectively that we weren't going to have a blanket policy for every player that they're going to throw this many innings, this guy's going to throw that many innings. It's going to be, you know, a read as we go. And with Brady, he's been, you know, he's a warrior. You know, he's been taking the ball every fifth day, and we tried to protect him in different ways earlier in the year, shorter pitch counts, extra days rest, stuff like that. But we're at a point where that fatigue is becoming real, and we just need to give him a little breather, and it's the right thing for him.
In your mind, JJ, is this like a couple-week kind of breather, or do you guys need to really evaluate giving someone a longer-term time off so you can get to the end of the season? Because I know you also still want to build up his innings for this year so that obviously you're good going forward.
Yeah, I think that's something that you know, Cal, Mike, and our medical staff, along with Brady, will determine, you know, when he's ready. You know, I don't think this is something, you know, Brady's not a guy, and this goes into the offseason as well. He doesn't like to put the ball down. You know, he's probably going to continue to play catch. He likes the, you know, the feel of the ball coming off his fingers consistently. So he's not a guy that's a 3-month rest and recovery guy in the offseason. So I think through something like that, it'll probably take a couple days, and he'll start playing catch again. And then you work with the player. Their body's going to, you know, let them know what they can handle when it's the right time to get built back up and get going. So, you know, it's kind of hard to answer that right now specifically. We'll see where he is in a week or so.
I know you don't have the full scope, obviously, of where those guys are. And I know that Daniel Lynch is scheduled to start, obviously, for Omaha here in a few minutes, JJ. Just organizationally, I think the last time we had you on, I had said, hey, the plan would be to have Lynch or Coar up again at some point this year. Does this open the door again for them? I know you had said you wanted them to earn the chance to come back up, but sometimes injuries just kind of make those decisions for you.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about when you talk about roster management. You know, when we put a Lynch and a Coar on the roster, Kyle Isbell was a roster ad this year as well. You know, they become part of your 40-man roster. So as much as you want to take them and allow them time in the minor leagues, once they're on the roster, they're a viable option every single night for you. That's just the reality of being on the 40-man roster. You know, fortunately, you know, we've gotten to a point where Daniel's made a lot of starts in AAA since he was sent down Colwater's got a handful of starts since he was sent down. They're tracking in the right direction. They're doing some things that we wanted them to do. So, you know, we feel good about it. We feel good about where they are. And if they've got to get called up, we have no issue with it. So we'll see where it takes us over the, you know, it's 2.5 months left in the season. So it's a long time. You know, we've got quite a bit to go. And, you know, we knew it would be their time again at some point. It's just a matter of when. But in the meantime, the message to them is just keep working on what you're working on and pitch well. So you're in the right spot when you do get called up.
J.J. Piccolo joining us here on Cody and Gold. Of course, Royals Vice President and Assistant General Manager. Bobby Witt Jr., Nick Prado called up to AAA. They're making their debut here as we speak there for the Omaha Storm Chasers. Why is now the right time for Bobby Witt Jr., Nick Prado to make their debut at the AAA level?
There's just been so much consistency from the start of the season. You know, Bobby started out, you know, tough first couple weeks, but quickly rebounded and numbers completely reversed on him. And then, you know, you factor into what we saw last summer, factor into what they did in the fall, what they did in the spring. And a lot of it has to do with just the maturity of the player. Whenever they make a jump, whether you're going from rookie ball to A ball to double A, or in this case, double A to triple A, you know, we got to know that they can handle some speed bumps along the way. And Bobby's shown that he can. Nick has shown that he can. But the real answer is they're just performing, and there's really good opportunity for them to get at bats every day at the next level. So that's why we made the move when we did. You know, we had been talking about it for a couple of weeks. Of course, they got chosen for the Futures game. So then you sort of, you know, when's the next time after the Futures game? And they had a week at home. And then middle of last week, we started eyeing up this week because the AAA team is coming back to Omaha. And it's always nice when guys can go from a home team to a home team without having to leave in the middle of a road trip or joining a team in the middle of the road trip. So it just made sense that this was the right time to get him there.
Did you in any way, because I always wonder with prospects, obviously some guys, whether you guys do it intentionally, JJ, or we do in our minds, become like attached to each other. While I don't feel like it started that way with Bobby Witt Jr. and Nick Prado, it obviously eventually at some point this year started to feel this way. Is there an appeal for calling guys up at the same time to AAA, or is that intentional, or is it just, oh, both guys are playing well in their spots for both?
No, excuse me. It's not intentional. And, you know, and that's something that's really difficult. I mean, I've done this a long time, along with Scott Sharp and Dayton. You know, players in their minds, they've always gone through, especially like a college player. You know, in this case, you got two high school kids, but you know, they go from their freshman year to their sophomore year, their junior year, and they just matriculate through the system. That doesn't happen this way in professional baseball. You've got to be producing, and then there's got to be clear opportunity for you to get the at-bats you need to get in the next, at the next level. Pitching's a little bit easier, but we went through this last year with Singer going up and then Bubic going up, and then we had Kowar and Lynch and Heasley and Bolin. You know, all the other guys that weren't going up, and, you know, the messaging to them was, you know, just understand, like, there's not a definite rhythm or flow to this. It's how you're pitching and what opportunity is there for you. Because in this case, quite honestly, MJ Melendez is playing just as well, if not better. You know, but our catching situation, MJ easily could go to AAA, but we also have Sebastian Rivero in AAA and others who've had major league time in Nick Deeney and Valoria. So we want MJ to get it back 6 days a week. You know, that's what we think his development needs right now. So he can do that more easily in double A. And at some point, you know, we are going to need to move him to triple A because he's, you know, really dominating double A at this point. But, you know, there's an example of two guys made more sense right now. MJ easily could have gone with them. But for his development, the at-bats are more important. So when he's not catching, he's DHing all the time. In AAA, he may not have been because we have other guys on the 40-man roster who need to get their at-bats. So it is a tough thing for players, but the short answer is it wasn't intentional to move them together. It just so happens that the opportunity and the production match right now, and that's why they went together this time.
Speaking with Royals Assistant General Manager J.J. Piccolo, one of the things that's been talked in the big league club but certainly impacts what you do, understanding what the minors do in the big league level as well, is the conversation around third pitch development. I know Brady Singer had talked a little bit about that. Matheny had talked a little bit about that. Like, if I can't get guys with the first two pitches, having a third one isn't going to do me any good. Is that a conversation you guys have had organizationally, J.J., about, hey, is there a time where we need to start that earlier or focus, or is it a point of emphasis for you guys yet? Are you worried about that yet? Just knowing there's been a couple of times here recently where people have brought that up about a few of your prospects.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And the answer is you need three pitches. That's the answer. Philosophically, we believe that. We know to navigate through a lineup three times, which, you know, I know where the game's going or is with that, but theoretically, you want your starting pitcher to go through the lineup three times, and the best pitchers in the game, that's what they do. So we're not going to pigeonhole any of our starting pitchers, saying you're not going to pitch the third time through the lineup. You know, and if you're going to get through two times in the big leagues, you better get through it three times in the minor leagues. You know, because it's that much harder in the major leagues. But in order to do that, you got to have a third pitch. So, you know, going back to where we are right now, and we can use a couple guys specifically, somebody like Keller and Singer. Keller was a Rule 5 pick, so his development was really sped up. You know, he didn't get the years in the minor leagues as a starting pitcher to really, you know, dedicate time to the third pitch. And with Brady, he got to the big leagues so quickly. And we felt like he was ready for it. And we did know that there was going to be some times where he's going to have to throw some changeups where he's not comfortable with it. But we believe in his, you know, for lack of a better term, his toughness. You know, he really can compete well. And he knows, we've heard him all talk about his third pitch and trying to develop it. And then when you get into the game competition, your instincts take over, and if you don't have that third pitch that you have 100% confidence in, you're probably going to go, in his case, to a slider. So it's ongoing discussions with him. You know, Cal is doing a great job in talking to him about situations when to throw the changeup, but the pitcher on the mound has to have 100% conviction in that pitch to execute it, to throw it and execute it. So it's a tough balance. But I think with Brad and Brady, what you're talking about is two guys whose development really sped up for different reasons, and that's why we're still trying to develop some pitches in the major leagues, and that's going to happen time to time. And on the flip side, you know, last year, you know, we've talked about Daniel Lynch committing to the changeup, and that's a really good pitch for him. He had a full year in exhibition-type simulation games to throw that pitch, and for Kowar was the curveball. You know, so, and you saw it when Kowar came up, he's got more confidence in his curveball, but he still has, you know, supreme confidence in his changeup. So that's where development's important. That's why, you know, taking the steps through the minor leagues are more often not what's necessary. And then once in a while you get some outliers. And right now, two of our five starters I put in the outlier category. I mean, with Brady just being too good, and then Brad being a Rule 5 pick. So it's a really good question. It is part of our development. You know, a majority of our starters do have three pitches.
Yeah.
You know, two guys we're seeing, they're two-pitch dominant type guys.
Lastly, JJ, I just wanted to go back to Bobby Witt Jr. in particular. I know a lot of Royals fans, now that they're excited to see him in AAA, they want to know, okay, well then, what's the timeline like for the next step?
Like tomorrow?
So I know you guys have benchmarks, I would assume, that you like to see from guys at all levels. What kind of needs to happen overall for Bobby Witt Jr. to make his debut?
Well, it's performance and it's opportunity. It's really the same thing. I mean, it's, you know, we obviously want to see how he does in AAA, and there is a difference between AA and AAA. And I will say, I don't think it's overall talent level. You know, I think it's a little bit better, for obvious reasons. But I think it's the experience of the pitchers that they're going to be facing that is more closely aligned to what they'll see in the major leagues. Meaning, guys can repeat pitches better. You know, if there's a weakness that Bobby or Nick have, it's going to be exploited more often in AAA, and they're going to have to adjust. And if they're making those adjustments and those mental adjustments, and they're performing, then it's a great sign that they're ready for the major leagues. So there's no timetable. But then it's also, you know, for both guys, it's opportunity. You know, we're not going to bring a young player up and have them not play every day. You know, they're still in a phase of their career, especially coming off last year where they didn't accumulate 500 plate appearances, that the at-bats are important. So it's playing well, producing, preparation, and an opportunity in the major leagues. And often that's the toughest last jump you got to make.
J.J. Pecola, Royals Vice President, Assistant General Manager, Thanks so much for the insight and, as always, for coming on the show with us.
No problem, guys. Thank you.
You got it. That's J.J. Piccolo here on Cody and Gold. Obviously,
so if he hits a homer today, we're good, right? He can be up tomorrow, or is that not?
I think
performance over a long period of time, probably, huh?
I understand, too. Nick is supposed to be keeping track of what's going on in AAA. He's supposed to let us know. Apparently, I don't know what there's going to be. He's going to let us know in some form or fashion.
If Bobby Mitchell do something cool?
Yeah, home run, a hit, something, maybe an amazing defensive play. I don't know. He's keeping an eye on the game for us.
He hasn't come up to hit yet.
It will be painfully obvious okay. if Bobby Witt Jr. does something good today.
Okay. We're counting on
There'll
you.
There'll be no mystery in it.
We're counting on Nick to
no
let
subtlety.
Us know. Okay. So that's something to keep an eye on. I want to go back to
the injuries.
The injuries and what we started the conversation with J.J. Piccolo. Again, if you're just joining us, the Royals making the announcement that both Danny Duffy and Brady Singer on the 10-day IL, the left flexor strain for Danny Duffy, right shoulder fatigue for Brady Singer, and then Ryan McBroom, Tyler Zuber, the two individuals that got recalled and now will be with the big league club tonight in Milwaukee. You heard J.J.'s response to just in general the Brady Singer injury when it comes to shoulder fatigue, and he said they weren't going to have a same blanket plan for every pitcher, but they knew the type of innings that he had on his arm from last year and this year, and he's like, you know, Brady Singer essentially has been you know, fighting through it, right, and giving sure. him everything he could. But at some point, this is what they needed to do. They needed to sit him down. He didn't put a timeline on, all right, does that mean he's done for the, you know, for weeks, for months? Is he just done for a week? That's something we have to follow. But the Danny Duffy part, other than Brady Singer, the Danny Duffy part's fascinating because it's retroactive to the 17th. The trade deadline is
the
30th
this year. 30, Normally 31st. Okay. It lands on a weekend, and okay. Major League Baseball is stupid.
Okay, because I keep saying 31st, but it's the 30th. Okay, so it's the 30th, so you start doing the math on the days. There is still a day or two there, but if you're another team that's out there, a guy that would have just come off for the same injury, left flexor strain, man.
What if the Royals are just playing the game? And, you know, they got a deal, you know, they're working on something. Like, let's say they were working, like, hey, Mariners are interested. Like, look, we won't put any more pitches on this arm. Don't worry. We'll just shut him down for a few days. We'll get you right as rain. That's playing. Dayton doesn't seem like the kind of person who'd play that level of deception with Major League Baseball. So this probably is a real injury. It's a problem. It probably means he's not going to get traded. Why would you? You know, like, that's the problem. If you're another team, when Danny Duffy pitches,
the value just went down. Did it not?
This is the conversation we have with Mondesi. But when Danny Duffy pitches, he's been good. He's been largely good in his career. There's been a lot of times, Gold, when Danny Duffy has not been available to pitch. And I think that, yes, whatever value you were going to get out of him, you've now lost. And if the value is not there, honestly, lined up, you might be better off playing the long game. Saying, Danny, no, we love you too much. We'd never send you out. Stick around here a little bit. Let's talk about a contract at the end of next year because we think we need a veteran starter. And we think you'd probably take a discount to stay in Kansas City. So let's just all work on this together, because if the value is not there because of another flexor strain injury, and that's multiple again this year, you just run into the same problem.
We go back in May. He pitched on the 12th of May. Then, remember, there was the press conference, and everybody's like, what's this press conference about? Turned out it was for the left flexor strain. He went on the IL. He was out from around May 15th or whatever it was till his next outing, which was June 23rd. He's pitched in 6 different games since then, and then now he's
back
on the IL. So, you know, if you're trying to do the math on what this means in terms of, you know, innings, the rest of the season, all that, I guess I'm not as big of a believer in his case that if they would have traded him or will trade him, that would mean he would not come back to Kansas City the next year.
No, I know, but if the value is not there, just taking any player from any organization is probably not worth the hit for multiple reasons. Like, if you're just going to get some double-A kid who's 25 years old who has no power, honestly, you're better off not taking the risk you're talking about. I don't think it probably has any impact on and that's even if the Royals want to bring back Danny Duffy. We don't know what their position is on that. Other than the fact we know they're probably going to need to add a veteran starter based on how the young guys have pitched to this
point. And Mike Minor's on a contract again for next year. It has a year left now with, obviously, things.
Are they going to just bring up Core, by the way? I guess that's the move, right?
Well, the way
Lynch is pitching right now.
I know he's pitching right now. The way J.J. Piccolo was kind of talking about it, one of the two, for, I mean, you kind of get the sense. there's a chance, too, the way the starting rotation lays out the rest of the week, potentially, that he could pitch today and they could still call him up and he pitches, what would that
Saturday,
be? Saturday.
Sunday. Or no, wait.
Or, let's say today's Tuesday. Today's Tuesday.
I think really hard about it.
So, I mean, that could still happen. Like, he could if he pitches well today, I could still see them. They wouldn't call him up for a few more days because there'd be no reason to do that, knowing that he can't pitch.
I mean, carrying Dozier, McBroom, O'Hearn, like all on a roster together. Like, I'd rather have more pitching probably at that rate, but that's me.
And Zuber's back with the
I like Zuber. I've got some hope that he can do something, but they're stuck, man. This isn't quite like David DeJesus breaking, you know, like you remember if he got hurt right before he broke a hand, I think is what it was, right before the trade deadline. It's not that with Duffy because you knew you were taking some injury risk anyway. And if it really is just, hey, he needs a few days off. But if it's more than that, you can't trade for a guy that you don't know can't start for you for 3 weeks. Not unless you're just giving up peanuts to do it, or the Royals are carrying the entirety of the salary.
Yeah, because it's still, we were looking at the number yesterday. Is it a little over $5 million or so that another team still has to eat?
Yeah, or the Royals.
Or the Royals, you know, some type of agreement, some cash going back the other way, whatever it may be. You know, I doubt it's fully one way or the other, but that just depends on what you're willing to give up. Something to now follow continuing the trade deadline. It complicates things on when we were going through with the 30th and who could be on the market. Now you've got one of your guys that was certainly a trade candidate at the very least, who's now going to be on IL. And I saw someone on the text line mentioning what you did. People are now like, oh, well, is there something going on here as far as a trade and why that? But hopefully he's healthy and hopefully it's not a setback on the injury front. But to see that news, I don't think anybody was expecting that. The way things went over the weekend in Baltimore was frustrating enough, or eight in Kansas City against Baltimore was frustrating enough. And now the team in Milwaukee and two of their starting pitchers, or one guy that's been out of the bullpen recently, Danny Duffy, and then Brady Singer, both on the IL. The Singer one is, all right, look, he's a key piece for the future. You got if they got to
build
sit
up
him
his
down,
innings, but gotta, limit if
they
how gotta, you're doing.
Yeah, if they have to sit him down for the rest of the season, let's say that's the case. Again, I don't know if that's the case, but let's say they have to, then so be it. I mean, you set me up for 2022.
Yeah, and you heard the way we knew this was going to come up. Like, I'm not in the, Brady Singer's injured. He only got to throw 60 innings last year. This is the way, 64 innings last year. He's already at 87 innings for this year. So that's, he's already looking at a 25% increase. That's the most the Royals like to do in any year for a minor league season. That's the maximum they like to take it to. I think the best idea is he sits for 2 weeks. He comes back and he pitches for a month again. And maybe he sits out the final 2 weeks and you get him like 110, 120 innings. And then by the time this thing rolls around next year, he's at 150, 160 if he's ready to go. But this is not surprising. Like, the Brady Singer thing is like not surprising. Nobody pitched last year. I assume this was going to happen eventually. Jacob DeGrom's been missing every third start for the entire season.
Yeah, if you remember the right shoulder fatigue for Duffy, that came up, probably been a month now. It was back against the Tigers June 16th. June the 16th against the Tigers. In that game, he was pitching well, but he only pitched three innings. And then that's when we learned that he had been dealing with shoulder fatigue prior to that outing. So going back to Piccolo's comments about just him kind of gutting it out.
Oh. But did Bobby Witt Jr. do something?
This is the Bobby Witt Jr. alert.
Bobby Witt Jr.
Uh-huh.
One for one.
Uh-huh.
Single to center field.
All right.
Single feels a little light, but I'll take it.
First triple-A at bat. All right.
I appreciate the update. We'll keep them coming throughout
was
the day.
Was it a hard hit
today,
or was it a, how hard of a hit single are we talking about?
Line here? Drive.
Ooh.
Call him up.
That's
all we need to see. Single and triple-A. He's good to go.
He's ready for the bigs.
He's already too good for triple-A. One for one in a single. It's already
I'm looking
set.
At the video now. Sharp single. Sharp single to center.
Well, it's actually more impressive. It was a 9-pitch at bat too. So I like that. 9-pitch at bat and gets a single out of a nice AB. Prado got a walk. By the way, Nick Prado with a walk.
Have a sounder for him. It's no offense to you, Nick Prado. I'm sure you've had a very fine season. This show's already hitched its wagon to the Bobby Witt Jr. camp. We got shirts and stuff. What would a Prado shirt even look like?
Ooh. I have no idea on the Nick Prado front. Just copy the Hosmer Mania shirts and just turn it into Prado.
Prado Mania?
Yeah, it just doesn't have the same ring to it at all. But yes, we'll keep an eye on Bobby Witt Jr. Definitely nice to see that he got his first hit at AAA in his first at-bat. 9-pitch at-bat. Coming up next, we'll get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. An interesting stat was thrown out there about teams that win 14 or more games in the NFL and what happens the next year. Will it apply to the Chiefs? That's next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Chiefs Red Half Hour, every day at 11:30 on Cody and Gold.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour. We'll get to one publication's pick for the biggest reason why we should be optimistic in Kansas City. And I'll just tell you, it's not Patrick Mahomes, according to them. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Hard to believe that it...
Were they doing, like, will we do the non-Patrick Mahomes edition of that question?
Maybe so. We'll find out. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. But Scott Kazmir, who he covers sports betting, and he's a bookmaker. He has his own website. He's also an NFL writer. He's going through each team leading up to the season. Like, today's the Raiders. And he's finding different gambling angles to talk about each team and looking at, hey, this is what's happened in the past. This might be why you want to bet this way for the win total. And it's really interesting stuff. Today's the Raiders. Yesterday was the Chiefs. So he went through a couple different times and laid out some interesting stats. To me, the most interesting one might be this, that NFL teams that win 14 or more games decline by an average of 4 wins the following season. 27 out of 29 won fewer games. That's why. Like, the stat, we'll get to what we believe in it. But that's a real stat. It's pretty crazy to think about. That is true. 27 of 29 teams that won 14 or more won fewer games the prior season.
Sure, now, 14 games is a lot.
Yeah. Now, we also have to add in this year there's 17 games being played. So, Nat, I mean, win totals are different this year. We've got to, like, change our mindset when we see win totals for a team that's predicted to win 9.5, realizing that that's an extra game this year. That team wouldn't be predicted to win 9.5, in a normal season. The 1989 to 1990 49ers, and then the 03-04 Patriots went 4-2 in back-to-back years.
Those 14-2.
14-2. Yeah, 4-2. 14-2. That would be the two teams out of that 29 that did it. The Chiefs, out of those group of teams, much like the 49ers or the Patriots who had Tom Brady, if you look who had who at quarterback, that's all you need to know if it's possible to do so. 14 wins is tough, even with 17 games. That's a tough thing to do. But an average of four less wins this season, come on now. Say what you will, no matter if you're somehow someone that's out there that's completely down on the Chiefs. Nobody actually believes the Chiefs are losing 4 more games this year.
How am I supposed to assume that?
I mean, unless you're going to tell me that they're going to have a year where catastrophic injuries happen across the board and they lose their quarterback.
There is something to be said about a 14-game team and whether or not this team is as good as last year's. Because I defense is where I think that biggest loss probably is coming from. Because from an offensive standpoint, how could they be 4 games worse? They're the exact same team minus Sammy Watkins, but plus an improved offensive line, we believe. So even if they're slightly worse at the other wide receiver spot, you're going to do that. Now, in any given year, I would say the one thing about the 14 that you'd mentioned was the injuries. Knowing who's going to get hurt that year, I feel like, is kind of a weird thing. And the more you play this roulette game with a great team and the same players, the more times you roll the dice, because it's football, that one of the more important players for you eventually gets hurt in the regular season and causing it. I'm not talking about Patrick Mahomes. I'm talking about all the guys, you know, Matthew or Hill or Kelsey or whoever you're, you know, Orlando Brown, right? All of the important players that can factor in multiple wins over the course of the thing. This is one of those, I don't want to sound like that fan, because I'm sure that this is exactly like, let's say this stat came up. Some team wins 14 games this year in the NFC. this stat comes up again. They're like, we're not going to be one of the 28 of 30 who lost more than four. We're too good for that. But you want to know the answer? The Chiefs are too damn good for that. Just look at the history. If you have Mahomes and Reed, you're not going to take a four-game dip from a 14-win season. The year after the Patriots went 16-0, they obviously did not go 16-0 again. They lost more games than they won, and that's going to happen again for the Chiefs. But the drop-off at maximum we're talking about is what? How willing would you be far to go? Two? Two less?
That's as far as I would go. I mean, look, it's funny out of all
two if more the, wins, the Chiefs, and there's an extra game.
Yeah, if the Chiefs were to go 13-4, gasp. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. What a terrible season. Like, that's what's funny to me.
Probably have a chance to still be the number one seed at that
record. Oh, right. Well, that's my point. It's like, God forbid, you know, that happened. You know, that's what's crazy to me when I saw some of the reaction to this. But the average of four or less wins is just something that I can't fathom. I really can't. I mean, I cannot possibly fathom that actually being the case. And that's why they're going to be in that group of the other two teams. They'll be now, after this season, there'll be three teams out of 30 that went 14-2 or better than 14 wins that followed up with a season that was able to...
Because they would have, in a 16-game season, gone 13-3.
Right, and now you add in, week 18, but 17 games.
Who's the 14-2 or 15-1 team that's throwing this whole number off that's getting it to four? Is it that Panthers team with Cam Newton? Because someone's got to be really wrecking this number, because not everybody could just go from like a 14-win to a 10-win team. Somebody's down here like slogging it with six or seven.
To have it go by an average of
losses. A lot. And that's the thing you look at for any team. Again, the Panthers, the year they went 15-1, we had talked
all
about
all it takes is if one of those teams won 14 the year before, and if their starting quarterback went down, they might have ended up only being a 6-win team or a 5-win team.
They went by 8. They went from 15-1, that Panthers team, to 7-8-1.
Yeah, that's going
to
hurt you.
But again, Rivera's a good coach. I'm not saying that. But that's Rivera and Cam Newton, who was hurt a lot the following year. Dinged up quite a bit, and that team wasn't any good. So of course they took a significant slide down from the following thing.
It's crazy though, because let's not forget that year. I mean, now Cam Newton, clearly nobody's trying to say that they were on the same level of what the type of quarterback Patrick Mahomes was, but Cam Newton won, you know, he was MVP that year. So it's not as if everybody was like, oh, this is a complete fluke. Now it turned out to be a fluky year based on injury and everything, but overall Cam Newton was still coming off an MVP season. So nobody at the time thought the Panthers were going to go win 14 or 13 games the next year, but nobody thought they were going to fall back that way. You probably would have guessed
11 or 12. 10,
yeah, 10, 11 win team the next season.
But they were also coming off a season the year before they were 5-8-1. Okay, so they
yeah, the Chiefs have been in three straight AFC championship games.
Cam Newton was hurt a little bit, but he was 5-8-1 as a team. They won like six games as a team. They weren't a good team the following year. And then they were 12 and they were just inconsistent. They were a 7-win team. They were a 12-win team. They were a 6-win team. They were a 15-win team. They were a 7-win team. The Chiefs aren't that. Like, the consistency to stay on the top is something that just shouldn't be ignored with the Chiefs. And I don't mean that to sound like, I get it. It's easy to be a homer of the Chiefs right now. Super easy. They're the best team in the league. Been the best team in the league for multiple years. They got the best quarterback, one of the best coaches. You're not even being a homer.
It's not even being a homer. You're just stating how it is now for the Chiefs.
I try not to turn a blind eye for when I think something might be missed, but there is 0% chance, barring a significant injury to only one person, that I think the Chiefs have four more losses this year than they did last year. And that's giving the extra game to give them a loss. I just don't see any way it's plausible.
And in that scenario too, that means a bulk of those have to come.
Team.
A bulk of those would have to come in the first 5 weeks of the season. If you're just looking at the opponents, you would know pretty quickly. In the way the schedule, or it would suddenly mean that, man, Justin Herbert is and the Chargers are a problem. It means he would have lost one in the division suddenly that was unexpected,
or two in the division for the first time ever. They get swept in the division was what it would really take.
Or, because you just let me look. The Broncos aren't winning a game against the Chiefs this year. The Raiders, who knows? I would say no, but last year they did. They did get a win.
What if they get Aaron Rodgers then, maybe?
Well, that ship has sailed to me. Rodgers is playing in Green Bay.
You just let it go? Done?
Yeah. He's playing in Green Bay. He's either that or he's retiring.
That too last week, Cody.
Oh, yeah. That was another thing we discussed. I'm done with the Aaron Rodgers. We can stop talking about it.
Oh, you've shut it down, huh?
It's done.
It's on your do not talk list?
Well, I mean, today there was a report that he turned down a contract, but I'm done with it. Aaron Rodgers is staying in Green Bay. It's it. He's not going anywhere. He's not getting traded to Denver. Next offseason, he might. Next offseason. Schefter is reporting that might be a clause in the contract, that they agree to trade him next year if he signs any new deal.
Alex, do you have a do not talk list?
I don't really have a do not talk list.
Well, there's certain things he just doesn't want to talk about. He should establish an I don't want to talk about it list. I think that's on it.
Yeah, I'm just the whole Aaron Rodgers, I'm done with. He's going to play for the Packers. So that's on it. I don't know what else I would have on the list right now. I'd have to think for a second.
There was at some point that you said you didn't want to talk about Drew Lock anymore also. So it might just be a Broncos-related list.
Yeah.
I'm starting to feel like it might be narrowed down to a certain team versus just a topic list.
Yeah, it was the topic of Drew Lock, is he a starting quarterback in the NFL? I said, I'm done talking about it. To me, the answer is no.
We've got it. We're starting to build up. We're starting to build up a do not talk list.
What was that noise?
I don't know.
I wasn't the only one that heard that, right?
My computer's on mute.
I heard it as well.
Okay, just making sure I'm not going crazy.
My phone's on silent.
I'm just making sure I'm not going crazy. I heard something. I was like, is that a new alert for Bobby? Does that mean something bad happened in the Bobby Witt Jr. game when we hear that noise? I didn't know if we changed things. All right, so let's continue the Chiefs Red Half Hour. And I brought it up with a national publication. That national publication is Bleacher Report. They went through, as they get set for camp, and said, hey, this is the biggest reason each team should be optimistic.
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Okay, we're done, right? All right.
Nailed it.
That's it. All right. So next
article over.
So next topic, actually. Honestly, so they didn't list Mahomes because, the answer is Mahomes. Of course, that's the reason why we're most
optimistic. This is a classic, if we're not talking about Patrick Mahomes, what's your answer conversation?
What they put was they're optimistic because they have lofty expectations. This goes back to even any discussion we've had all offseason and really going back to last offseason. And that is, right now with Mahomes and Andy Reid, the expectations are as high as they can possibly be. It is Super Bowl or bust. That's the world we're living in. It's a great world to live in, if that's the case here in Kansas City, where it's nice. Legitimately Super Bowl or bust. Not the crap that people would always tell themselves as a player, like, oh,
not
yeah,
like what the
our goal is to win the Super Bowl this year, says the crappy Cincinnati Bengals.
Say the Adam Gase-led Jets team, like probably at some point during their tenure.
Like, there's going to be a quote from a Houston Texans player at training camp, of them that are open to the public, by the way, and only season ticket holders, I should say, so not even the public. Someone's going to ask him about their season, and it's going to be some safety on the Texans, and they're going to say, yeah, we're trying to go out there and win a championship this year.
Win this division, win a championship.
Not that crap. We're talking about the real stuff here.
My favorite quote, a national writer was asking Texans fans, just to be sidetracked for a minute, a national writer was asking the Texans fans, like, hey, Texans fans, I need your help. What would it take you, what would it take for you to be excited about the upcoming season, to be optimistic and excited about the upcoming season for the Texans? And the exact fan's response was, to club me over the head long and hard enough for me to think it was 2019 again. It's like, yeah, that pretty much perfectly sums up the Houston Texans upcoming season. Just knock me unconscious enough to make me actually think that I've traveled back in time 2 years.
It's still their fall. Their fall is just nuts in the Texans for where they were not too long ago. And the Chiefs ruined the Texans and now they're crap.
I think the answer is the offensive line, by the way, because that to me is the one big change. Like, if you're looking for, hey, how can the Chiefs be definitively different from where they were last year, Gold? The offensive line is it, right? What does Patrick Mahomes look like if he has the kind of time we saw Aaron Rodgers have last year? And maybe the line isn't that good. Or what does he look like? We see the kind of time that we've seen other great quarterbacks like Tom Brady get in the Buccaneers this year. If he has that kind of time, that's where my optimism is, like, okay, maybe they can be 14-2 again.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've kind of pushed back on it a little bit. You think maybe it'll take a little bit longer. I think week one, it'll automatically be the best offensive line that Patrick Mahomes has had. And I know there's questions on, is Creed Humphrey going to start at center, as we talked about yesterday, and could there be other rookies on it? But I think that'll be the case. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the expectation, that they fix this offensive line problem that showed its ugly head in the Super Bowl. It had some problems during the regular season, but they did a good job of masking it for the most part. But it obviously was the Super Bowl where everybody was talking about it. I think it's that, and then just the answer typically is not just, oh, Mahomes, and we always joke about that, how that's always the answer. It's the Andy Reid factor too. I mean, that should also be a qualifier when we go through
this conversation.
Too.
Probably.
You know, when we say you got to throw Mahomes out of the conversation because he's always the answer. Like, Andy Reid is that most of the time too. Just in terms of, why do you have faith that this team can meet those expectations? Yeah, it's Mahomes and it's Andy Reid. I mean, we go through every year, and once it's bye week, how good he is after bye weeks, how good he is in the month of September. I mean, he's essentially in his career, especially in Kansas City, he's getting a 4-0 start on everybody. Most years in September. And so that's a huge advantage that you have. Now, this year, if he's able to do it, it means he would also have beaten two teams that we consider to be significant contenders in the AFC.
It's kind of incredible what they're talking about, because there's some truth to it, is they have grown in expectations every year and have somehow constantly met them. So the expectations in year one, Patrick Mahomes just needs to be a successful rookie starter. He goes out and throws 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards. They go to the AFC title game for the first time in decades.
His first season,
whatever it was. His first season, yeah. And they go to the AFC championship game for the first time in forever since Joe Montana was running around, whatever. And so, okay, so now the next year you got real expectations. That guy just won the MVP. How are you going to meet the kind of expectations that come with that? Win the Super Bowl. Finish with the best, you know, get a bye, win the Super Bowl, no big deal. Then, even more expectations piling. Now you're an MVP winner, a Super Bowl MVP winner, and all you do is follow it up with a not quite MVP season, because Aaron Rodgers technically won it, but an MVP quality season again, and you go to the Super Bowl again. They don't seem like some people do break down at the level of expectation. If anything, they've managed to match it every single year, which is pretty uncommon. Is that my computer making this sound?
It might be mine, actually. I don't know.
Someone's computer is making that sound.
That must be mine, then. I don't know.
Mine is on mute. Is yours on mute?
It is not. It is now.
Okay.
We're launching a full investigation.
I gotta know where this, like, comedy sound is. Bleep, bleep. That's what it sounds like. I don't know what that means. But I just think that it's hard. How many teams actually meet that kind of expectation every year?
But that's what it is in Kansas City for the next 2 to 4 years, depending on how long these two and Mahomes or Reed are linked together, however long you think that's going to be, that will be the expectation every year. Now, the motivating factor stuff, yeah, that's never something that I'm concerned about with this team. Certainly, this is not the year if you were one person that was concerned last year. This is not the year to be concerned about motivation heading into the season. They come off the Super Bowl loss. We've heard from five different Chiefs in the last 3 weeks. You know, Kelce and Hill, the two most recent ones, about, you know, Kelce, or Hill even said he was embarrassed by what happened in the Super Bowl. Like, that motivating factor leads into all of this. Yes, they have these expectations and they have lofty expectations, but they're not a team that doesn't seem like they're motivated to get there. That's not a problem. If you're wondering just the AFC West as a whole, just what they list, like for the Raiders, why they should be optimistic. 2 years of coming close. How does that make you feel?
Coming close to what? Beating the Chiefs occasionally?
They were 8-8 last year. Oh, coming close to...
Did Jeff Fisher write that one?
It just says, John Gruden's tenure as a Vegas Raiders head coach hasn't yielded a playoff berth yet, but the Raiders have shown incremental growth. 4-12, 7-9, now 8-8.
7-9 to 8-8 is not incremental growth.
There you go. The Chargers? Now, theirs makes sense.
Herbert
is their answer. So they can still go, like, we can't say Mahomes anymore for these because that's the obvious answer. For there, right now, their obvious answer is Herbert.
It's weird because you could be like, in a new offense, he was great in the last offense. Like, so even that part doesn't excite me. That'd be one of the reasons I'd be afraid. Like, if we did the inverse of this conversation, I'd be like, coaching. I'm worried about coaching.
For the Broncos, they just list a promising defense. The Broncos aren't going to contend in 2021 if a viable starter doesn't emerge from the Bridgewater Lock Camp competition.
Is that the worst answer you can get to this?
It says Denver has the pieces to field the top-tier defense this season. The Broncos ranked 21st in total defense a year ago, but they get Von Miller back, and then they added Kyle Fuller, Ronald Darby, and then I do like their draft pick, Patrick Surtain, the second.
I feel like the only thing worse on that is if they're like, you can feel really good about their interior offensive line. I feel like, oh, God, this is horrible. Great safety play. I'm not saying those things don't matter, but if that's the thing you're most excited about, like your ability of your linebacker crew in a non-pass rushing situation, it's sad times.
So our friend Nate Taylor, who now is going to join us during football season, you saw that announcement yesterday. We were excited about that. He's going to join us on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock during football season. He'll also be on The Drive later on in the week. And then the Nate Taylor Show on Monday nights here on 610. So we can't wait for that to start up as Chiefs camp gets here next week, really this weekend, but we'll be up there starting on Monday. We found out that today, actually, we're going to be up there on Monday as well for Chiefs practice. And so Nate Taylor and The Athletic, they were going through the worst offseason moves that teams made this year. And you think for a second, it's the moves you didn't make more so than the particular move. Because if you look at the moves they did make, all right, there wasn't a whole lot of guys they went out and got other than on the offensive line, and those were all great moves, right? I mean, it seems to be you went out.
I can't, like, right now I would call them good moves, yeah.
I mean, Orlando Brown, it's hard to see that not working out in some form or fashion. Joe Tooney seems like a guy that you're not going to have to worry about at left guard. It's the move maybe you didn't make. And for me, as I led the show with today with Melvin Ingram, to me, that might be the move. That might be the move if Frank Clark, I'll just leave it at this, if Frank Clark ends up being suspended this year, not in 2022, and it's more than one game, I think we're going to look back and say potentially not going and signing a veteran, whether it's Ingram, whether it's Houston. I guess technically they could still go and sign Houston. Not bringing them in might be the move we look back and say was a mistake. If we're sitting here midseason and there's no pass rush for an extended period of time, and you have a secondary that is relying on L'Jarius Sneed,
sure,
and you don't have a good enough play from Baker or Ward, I think that would be the move we say, the move they didn't make would be the one that we say may have been the biggest mistake.
They didn't make that many moves this offseason, and most of them are hard to be like, well, that was a, you know, mistake. Because if you gave out, you know, the biggest risk one is probably Jaron Reed based on the amount of money you spent, because like Tooney feels like no risk. I know how much money they spent on him, but it seems like the Mitchell Schwartz deal to me. Like there's just almost no way where you feel like it's going to backfire, right? Like at the very worst, he's just going to be a very good offensive lineman paid about what very good offensive linemen make. That's what it feels like, is like the bottom basement end of the Joe Tooney deal. Orlando Brown could be the worst move if for some reason they never reached an extension with him, or he doesn't turn out to be the kind of left tackle they think he is.
Yeah, but if they want to, like, if they want a Super Bowl.
Right now, I love that move.
Yeah.
So the only answer currently is you're correct. It's the move they didn't make. I actually think it's a corner. I know you're bigger on Ingram now, obviously, because of the off-season trouble for Frank Clark.
Oh, yeah, before if Frank Clark didn't have the March in July or June incident, then that's not a problem. I was not someone back in March saying they needed to bring in Melvin Ingram.
No, I think it was quite the opposite.
I was intrigued by some of the names and the fact that he came for a visit, but no, what changed everything is the pending, we think a pending suspension. I just wonder, the longer this goes on, is there a chance that the Chiefs kind of get out of this for 2021?
If
and
I were
don't
him,
have to worry about it.
If I were the Chiefs,
year.
I would just be telling them to delay court cases. Ask for some time to get your defense together.
Yeah, but if you're Frank Clark, you want it wrapped up because next, you know, I mean, if you're Frank Clark,
you're about to be a free agent. Yeah, no, if you're Frank Clark, that's a bad decision. His agent should be telling him to get rid of his legal trouble now. I'm
I
just
think
saying,
most times it's like, hey, find a way to plead that this thing down as quickly as possible to avoid, you know, the lightest sentence, but I don't think he's going to be sent. You know, he's not going to. None of us actually believe he's going to prison or anything. But he's suddenly got himself in some
trouble.
Isn't
that wild? Because if you got caught with an Uzi in the back of your Lambo Gold, I'm pretty sure you're still going to jail. I could be wrong, I guess.
I don't know, man. It just.
I mean, if you got a Lamborghini, you got the kind of money to afford a good lawyer, and if you can afford a good lawyer, there's arguments to be made.
If I did the same thing allegedly in. Twice in 3 months, then I think there's,
you're going to jail.
Then I'm probably not getting out of it.
You better hope other people in the car. That certainly doesn't hurt, because then at least you can make that argument.
You're right. I can't because I wouldn't be able to say it's my bodyguards, because obviously I would not be having bodyguards. So I would.
There would be some follow up questions. And honestly, in this case, you need to make enough money to convince someone to be a fall guy. Because if it's just you and I in the car, I'm not landing on the, oh no, that's my Uzi. Sword for you. That just ain't happening. If we're in your car and it's your Uzi, that's on you.
And there's a variety of things I don't plan on doing. The other, besides the having an Uzi in the car, the other one is I don't plan on driving in California anytime soon. I'm luckily, I'm
mean, solved.
These two.
I plan
Kansas,
on driving
Missouri
in California next February.
Okay, well, now you know the laws. In case you were considering it,
that's when the Chiefs will be in LA for the Super Bowl.
Right. We'll be out there. Just make sure you'll be Ubering. You won't even be the driver, so maybe you'll be good.
Depends. I don't know how far any of this will be. We'll see. I guess we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
That is the Chiefs Red Half Hour here on Cody and Gold. Coming up next, just how important were all those close games last year for the Chiefs? Someone did a deep dive on maybe something that's not able to continue in 2022. We'll explain what that is next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.